Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
This is the Noon Business Lunch on WGN. Michael Miller is a frequent guest on the show, an economics professor at Western Washington University. He was a professor at DePaul when we first met him. We still appreciate his conversation. Michael, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Oh, it's great to be with you, John.
Let's talk about affordability. I know you've been looking at some reports or statistics. What's the word here?
You know, I keep hearing on the news that affordability is an issue, and I understand that with inflation where it is, and now with talk, of course, of oil getting more expensive, which means gas prices will probably stop falling, people have trouble meeting their bills. But the question, of course, is not just are prices moving, but is your income that you receive from your employment and your returns on your investment, is that rising as fast as inflation? So I took a look at the numbers, and there's a number that is available from the Census Bureau and the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it has to do with wages and salaries. That's across the board, people at the bottom as well as people at the top. And it turns out if you look at the last 2 years, so I went back before the start of the Trump administration, go back into the Biden administration, and what you find is real wages are up over that period 2.2%. Now, that may not sound like a lot, but it is up. In other words, people are making more money, even adjusted for inflation. So that's the affordability must be in certain areas that, okay, housing is still very expensive. Gasoline is still very expensive. But once you take out a couple of these areas where prices are going up more quickly, Americans are keeping up. In fact, they're beating the inflation.
You're telling me that I am making more money, or I'm making more money faster than the cost of these goods is going up, that I'm
that's
coming out
ahead. Show.
Is that what you're saying?
That's,
yeah.
That's
and
what
I'm,
the data show.
Well, that's funny that you put it that way. That's what the data shows, because anecdotally, I don't see or hear that. Now, maybe that's because the media is caught in a doom loop and they're not reporting it accurately. But it does seem to me like, well, we run into gas all the time, and beef is still really expensive. And those are two staples of American life. But
sure. But
if you took everything into account, eggs, obviously, are 79 cents now, so hooray for that, we are coming out ahead over the last 2 years. Is that the bottom line?
That's what the data, again, that's what the data show. And could I pick some areas where it's been tough? And, of course, housing and energy have been two where it's been tough. And if I constantly tell you that these prices are weighing on your family, you might conclude that that's true across the board. And so the only way you can settle that is to go to the data and see what the data tell us. And it seems clear, based upon, I have to have trust in the Census Bureau when it does that monthly survey that we use for the labor report, that wages are going up across the board faster than inflation is.
But not everybody is getting a 2.2% raise. I'll bet some people aren't getting a raise at all, and some fat cats are getting a big raise, and therein lies the dichotomy, right?
That's exactly. I mean, even looking at myself as I'm a year-to-year faculty member, which is just a wonderful arrangement that I very much love, and I got a raise with this coming year, but it's only 2%. So I know that inflation has been a little bit higher than that. So I'm one of the families where if you were to look at my take-home pay, it's not going to go up as fast as prices are going up. But, of course, the data I'm talking about here is on average. And the reason I like this one, it's both wages and salaries, is it includes people from the entire wage spectrum. In other words, people at the bottom as well as people at the top. And, again, on average, this is also consistent. I think the American economy is just amazing what's going on. Manufacturing is up. Retail sales are up. Employment is just Not many people are being hired, but very few people are being hired. So we're kind of stuck at, of all places, mm-hmm. full employment. I mean, we're doing, the dollar is reasonably strong, with the exception of the price of energy, which people, of course, harp on. The American economy is, as I said in the email to Pete, it's the envy of the world. Most places would love to be where we are.
I understand that. And I, though, think we are also, I think it's overused, but the description of the economy or the recovery is a K-shaped thing. I think we are looking at that. For instance, the people that are on the bottom of the K, all of this average talk is small consolation to them. And I don't know what the fix is of that, or if there is even a fix. You know, some people are going to make less and some people are going to make more. But the but the difference between the two seems to be great. And it seems to me like there's a lot of people on that bottom half who genuinely are struggling, who this description of 2.2% increase in wages means nothing to them. What do you say about that?
Well, you know, let me try to put a positive spin on it. Not that I'm purposely doing that. I just, let's look, because you kind of put a negative spin on it. So we have this
case shape.
Yeah. So let's take it from this perspective. What if you were to look at it that, yes, there are people who on the top are doing better, but the people on the bottom are doing better. They're just not doing as better faster, as fast as the people at the top. In other words, we're all moving up, which I believe is the case. It's just that the gap between the top and the bottom has gotten a little bit wider, especially in the area of, so I understand it, retail sales, if you look at what people are able to buy. But the people at the bottom are not going down. It's my understanding from the data. The people at the bottom are coming up. They're just not coming up quite as quickly as the people at the top. And so, it's still, you are right. It still gives us this unique outcome, which we call the K-shaped economy. But the K-shape would be very much a problem if the people at the top were either stable or doing better and the people at the bottom were falling. That would be a terrible outcome. I don't think that's what the data show us. The data show us that Americans, pretty much across the board, are doing better.
Hmm. I also like the fact that you referenced people's savings, their retirement accounts or 401ks.
Mm, yeah.
And I know more people don't have one of those than do, or those are not sufficiently funded for a lot of people's retirement needs. But I want to ask you a little bit about that in a minute. We're talking to Michael Miller. He's an economics professor and a regular guest on the Noon Business Lunch. Michael Miller is an economics professor. Michael, boy, you're getting a lot of text to our show today based on what you said before the break.
Okay. Let's hear.
I'm not going to read them all.
If you want.
I'll be happy to. But, I mean, the point is that some of our listeners just feel, ones that begin with this guy, you know, aren't going to go well for you. This guy has no clue how average people live. It's going to be no middle class. It'll be poor and wealthy only. John, your guest is wrong. Everything is doubled in prices at the stores. The salaries have not. Gas is outrageous, airfare, everything. Is your guest living in the present? I think you made your case very well. I suspect you're also not surprised by some of those reactions.
I am not. And more than a few times over my 40 years or 45 years in this field, there have been disconnects between the public and what economists see in the economic data. You know, we've had times where we were in the middle of booming expansions and 40-50% of the American people think we're in recession. So and by the way, I'm middle class, John. I came from very, very humble means, and professor, you don't go into academia to become a rich person. So
I know that. But I was at Walmart this weekend and I see people. And I'm upper middle class. I make more money than I think a lot of the people that I was in the store with. But I could see how those prices were important to those people. And I see the cars they drive, and I see the clothes they wear, and I see the things in their carts. And I see people that are really working hard to stretch the dollar just to get through Walmart. And then there's another group of people who are doing zippity-doo-dah. And I I think what I'm hearing is I don't care about the averages. I care about these people living in the bottom half of that thing, and they are struggling, Michael. And you're trying to tell us that they're not struggling as much as they think they are. That's the sort of thing that lost Joe Biden an election.
Good thing I'm not a politician. Yeah.
Well, maybe you could advise one, because if it is as good for us as you say it is, and really I'm not mocking you, but then I think
I understand.
Then somebody needs to communicate that in a better and real way.
John, you know, there was this famous economist back 100 years ago. His name was Maynard Keynes. And when he talked about the macro economy, one thing he brought up that kind of influences people's behavior is something called animal spirits. And animal spirits are these waves of optimism and pessimism that can overtake a market. And people almost begin to act what he essentially would say would be irrationally. And economists have never been able to use it much because we don't know how to put it into an equation. We don't know how to quantify it. But lately, over the past 20 years or so, economists have been able to do searches of news, both reported, say, on the radio or television and the print, and we can actually see in certain periods of time, is there a connection between people's perception of the economy and how often certain words are used in the press, like recession and unemployment and inflation and so forth. And there's no doubt that some of the people that they're responding as they are to the data I'm presenting, all they ever hear is how bad things are. And they almost have to ask themselves, what are their sources of information? Maybe it's not. I go to a website called FRED, which is the Federal Reserve Economic Database, the greatest, most impressive database in the world of macro data. The data I'm using comes directly from the government's surveys. And in some sense, it tells me, okay, I have these strong data, but people just aren't feeling it. And I just wonder how much of that could be influenced, not even by their own perceptions, but by what they're told everybody else is experiencing.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to make excuses. I just...
No, I'm trying to get my head around this, too. And I think that's, you know, it reminds me a little bit, Michael, is crime in Chicago. It's bad, but I think every Monday we talk about how many people were shot over the weekend. We don't say anything about all of the good fun people had, safe, happy, healthy fun in Chicago every weekend. And the one number wildly outstrips the other. We only hear about the
bad news. And even though I don't live in Chicago area anymore, I know that so much of the violence, unfortunately, happens in tiny, tiny little areas of the city.
Yeah.
And most of the city is relatively safe. So for a very large portion of the people, everything is okay. But if all you ever hear is, which I do, I still hear out here, like I check in on a Chicago media all the time, that things are really bad. If that's all I hear, I will begin to believe it, even if the data tell me that it's not the case.
That's Michael Miller. One last note. We're out of time, Michael, but some of our listeners are a little dubious about government data these days. But but that's a conversation for another day. I just wanted to acknowledge that. And I really appreciate your insight and thoughts about this today. Thank you for joining us.
It was a great discussion, John. Thank you very much.
It's Mike Miller. This is the Noon Business Lunch on WGN Radio. John Williams here. Our producer today is Neil Fisher. And moments ago, we talked to Michael Miller, the economics professor from Western Washington University, longtime DePaul guy, works out there now and is still a regular guest, saying some evidently pretty unpopular things on our show in the last half hour. John, I'll bet your guest is in the top 20% of income earners in the country and has a huge retirement plan paid for by the schools. He was saying that however people talk about or feel about the economy, actually wages are higher than inflation. That over the last 2 years, even before the Trump administration began through today, We are making more money than the cost of goods and services. We're coming out ahead at every level of the economic spectrum. The rich are getting richer, but the poor are getting richer as well, maybe not as much. He said that's just the data. And I had some questions about that. John, at the end of the Biden administration in December, January, the cover of the magazine The Economist said U.S. economy, the envy of the Western world. Then Biden lost the election because voters didn't believe it. All through the Biden years, the economy was great, but it did not trickle down to the average person. I referenced that point with our guest a little while ago. This one says, settle it with the data. Where is the data on child care and health care costs? You can use data to say anything you want. Good on you for pointing out the gulf in the K-shaped economy. And one more, although there were many. This one says, John, the rich are buying up everything, and they're going to dictate what people are going to have to pay for that. I like Michael Miller, and he's a really good economist, you can tell, who knows more about these things than you and I do. That doesn't mean sometimes the things coming out of his mouth are hard to hear. And you all can decide how complete his presentation was. Let's talk to Jim Dahlke now. Jim's a regular guest, too. Jim is the director of communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, John. Great to be here.
Okay, AI is a constant topic here. And speaking of buying up everything, what's your story about AI today?
Yeah, you know, we're looking at it in a couple different ways. The headlines tell an interesting story, and one is a commercial real estate angle here. The sort of irony of artificial intelligence today is there's this fear that it's going to, reduce jobs across the board in so many different industries and areas, but it's actually proven to be a boom for the commercial real estate industry, which is seeing AI firms gobble up lots of office space, particularly in the AI hubs. National AI office demand is up 85% year over year, with the majority of that happening in Silicon Valley, New York, Seattle, Northern Virginia, and Austin. What does this mean for Chicago? Well, Chicago is not exactly in one of these top AI markets. Currently about just over 300,000 square feet of AI-related office space here in Chicago. Compare that to over 7 million square feet in the Bay Area, just about 2.7 million in New York, and even Austin with almost 2 million square feet of AI office space. That said, Chicago's AI-related office space has grown 45% year over year. So certainly trending upwards, but the city itself is not exactly up in the upper echelon for AI-related office space. But that could be changing. We're seeing companies like Harvey, for example, which is a heavily venture-backed AI legal tech startup, just recently announced this year it's planning to open up an office later this month here in Chicago. Will we see more of that? We'll have to wait and see.
These firms that are buying up the office space for AI, what are they doing with that space? That's not filled with employees, is it?
So for the big labs, it is. And they, the companies like OpenAI, like Anthropic, they are doubling down on physical commercial real estate to bring in employees. So this is not, the data centers that we've so often talked about. This
right.
is actual office space for these kind of large language models. And so, we're seeing companies like OpenAI, like Anthropic, really kind of double down on having a physical commercial real estate, all over the country. And, Chicago, for the most part, all the data is a report from VTS, which is a software firm in the commercial real estate space. So they kind of looked at Chicago specifically and really kind of found that Chicago's AI thesis, it says, is enterprise deployment into manufacturing, logistics, healthcare, financial services, rather than the foundational model research. Effectively, what that means is Chicago has shown, an impetus to get artificial intelligence into some of its existing industries. Great for those industries being on the cutting edge, but not exactly great for, getting kind of those large language model companies to grow their presence right here in Chicago, at least so far.
Yeah. J.B. Pritzker's in your news as well. What's that story about?
Yeah, so this is from AI to quantum. Illinois is making a play to attract some of the brightest minds in quantum technology. The governor, Pritzker, recently announced a $3 million program called the X Labs Fast Fund. The goal is to convince elite scientists and tech entrepreneurs who win federal grants with the National Science Foundation to set up business and research labs right here in Illinois as part of this $3 million fund. So effectively, if folks win a federal grant for their quantum research and choose to build part of their projects here in Illinois, the state's offering a slice of a $3 million fund, as well as access to office space and lab equipment. So they'd have an opportunity to connect with the Illinois Quantum and Microelectronics Park that we've talked about often, that's down in the south side. So they'd be able to work out of there and have access to different quantum resources and technology lab space right here in Illinois. So this is really all a part of that ecosystem play. So we're seeing, you know, the state of Illinois double down on getting the big players, IBM, PsiQuantum, which is building a quantum computer. And now they want to have some startups and some of the smaller players round out the space down on the south side. So that's all part of this $3 million fund to hope to lure more tech talent specifically for quantum right here in Chicago.
I guess for a startup, every dollar counts, but $3 million does not sound like that much to me.
No, it's not. And again, it's just a piece of that. But I think the perk here, right, is access to the equipment and the ecosystem that's being built. So you're going to have, you know, for example, access to the cryogenic, you know, this extreme freezing test equipment that's available to the folks who are operating down at this south side facility. You know, this is extremely expensive equipment that if you don't have access to it yourself, you have to find a way to get to it. And this is one of those ways to do so. You know, Chicago, you know, the areas of Colorado, these are kind of the areas that are kind of bubbling up as quantum centers. And I'm just hoping, you know, this is just, the latest endeavor or initiative to get more companies to come here.
Jim Dahlke is the Director of Communications, Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative. Okay, Jim, more next week. Thank you for your help today.
Thanks, John.
Ron Saslow's back, the founder and managing partner of 35 Capital and the co-owner of the Chicago Slice. Hey, Ron, how are you today?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for having me back on.
So what's your deal? Are you a financial guy or you're a sports magnate? What's your deal?
I'm going to say a little bit of both, but mostly a sports guy.
Yeah. So you're the co-owner of the professional pickleball team, the Chicago Slice, right?
That is correct, yes. And Chicago Slice now in its fifth year of existence and continuing to gain tremendous momentum.
Yeah. Well, here's a feather in your cap. You guys are hosting a tournament now. Is this the first time?
This is the first time that Major League Pickleball is rolling through Chicago. It's had tournaments all over the country, but as I've always said, it's not a legit sport until Chicago's involved. So they're going to be rolling through this next week coming up, July 23rd through 26th. And then a couple days before that, Tuesday the 21st, we're doing another exhibition at Wrigley Field before the Detroit game. And as we have the last couple of years, it's a great chance for thousands of people to see pickleball being played in an exhibition. But as I said, it's the first year that it's going to be the actual tour coming through later in the week, starting on the July 23rd through the 26th.
How or where are they playing at Wrigley Field? Are they playing on Gallagher Way or are they
Gallagher
inside
Way,
Wrigley?
Right out front. So yeah. If you come into the game that night to either watch baseball or pickleball, you can't miss it. It's right there in the entrance and it's going to be a pretty phenomenal setup there.
They set up bleachers
then,
for that?
Yes, there'll be full stand seats there. People will be able to come watch the event, and I think they're going to be impressed as they have been the last couple years. Yeah. And then if they want to see the actual tour event take place, it's up at the new Lifetime North Shore Sport and Racket Club in Northbrook. That's the 4-day event starting on the 23rd, and they'll be able to see actual real competition for the first time in Chicago.
Right. But the team has been in existence. You guys have been on the road. Are you telling me this is the first time we've hosted another team or just a major tournament?
A major tournament. So this is the first time. So tournaments, kind of like golf tournaments, they go city to city, and they've been in many of the major pickleball locations in like Florida, Texas, California. But this is the first time that Chicago's having the chance to host. So we're pretty excited about it.
So Brooklyn will be here. California will be here. Texas, Phoenix, Dallas, Atlanta, Las Vegas, Southern California, the Utah Black Diamonds, and the list goes on. So if I wanted to go see these professionals play, how do I get a ticket? Do you show up or you got to get them in advance? What's the deal on that?
You can get them in advance and reserve them, which is a good idea because the events this year have been selling out. The best place to do that is jump on Major League Pickleball's website, which is majorleaguepickleball.com, or you can go to their Instagram at majorleaguepb. And if you also have the option to go to Chicago Slice website, which is chicagoslice.com, and their Instagram is chicagoslicemlp.
Got it. So I can get tickets that way. How is the Chicago
Correct.
Slice, the professional pickleball team, doing? How many people are on the team, too?
There's six players on the team this year. We're doing really well. We've got we've in the past won two championships, and we're now in a rebuilding stage. But we have some really exciting young players that are going to be on the team. Jamie Way, John Lucian Goines, and Elsie Hendershot are all young teenage players that are coming up through the ranks and are really exciting to watch. It's just amazing to see how young the sport is getting and how skilled they are early in their careers. But I assure you, if you play pickleball or if you've watched other people play pickleball, it's fun. When you go watch the pro players play, you won't believe your eyes. The speed, the power, the hand coordination, it's just incredible.
Yeah, those people and their damn young knees are probably at an advantage that the other crowd isn't. Okay, well, let's check it out. I think we've all seen videos. Heck, it was on ESPN or one of the sports channels over the weekend. Professional pickleball.
Yep, Fox did a nice job covering it.
Yeah, I saw that. ChicagoSlice.com. Ron, good luck. Continued success over there. Our best to the team.
I appreciate it, John. Thanks so much for having us on.
That's Ron Saslow, and it's chicagoslice.com.